Oh, that was a nice representation of your work. What was the name of that tune?
Silla Blues. I named it Lil Sherry.
Lil Sherry. Have you recorded that?
Yeah. I recorded it a couple of times. I recorded it with Benny Bailey. It's a record called Upper Manhattan Society. And Benny Bailey, myself, and Albert Daly, and Kenny Washington, and Mac B.
Cecil McB. On piano was Mark Batson, who is a junior student who's studying this great music called jazz here at Howard University, and hopefully someday we'll be doing his oral history. He will have made some contributions such as the kind that you've done. Again, I just want to say a couple of things about the distinctiveness of the sound that you get and that you have developed and mastered. Was it a combination of things, or I know you mentioned your influences of Ben Webster and I don't remember Lester Young, but I assume that Lester Young.
Press.
So how did you arrive at this particular? Do you think it was a combination of things, or
well, I don't know. I wasn't, my whole thoughts or my whole thinking of getting a sound wasn't that I wanted to sound like someone. I imagine I was so influenced with Ben, some people say I do sound a little like Ben, but I don't think so. But at that particular era in the 40s, early 40s, that was 99% of your you playing your instrument is to establish your identity. Your sound is your identity.
Right.
So I used to go off in the corner and play. I mean, it's very it's tiresome, and it's nothing for anybody to listen to. But I hold notes. I run a chromatic scale, and I get to a wall, and I let the sound come back, so I could hear it really clear. And I do that very slow, for about an hour, maybe half an hour.
Do you still do that?
No, but I did that in school many days, practically every day, because I thought that I loved Ben Webster's sound, and I knew Prez, I loved Prez's sound for the style that he was playing, how he got his, And I was just like conscious of that, it's the sound.
Now, with the setup that you're using, the it's a link.
It's the auto link, an old auto link.
And what number is that link?
Well, what happened is, anyway, it's actually it's no number, because when auto link was in Long Island, at the time I was in New York, I went to the factory, and I picked out a mouthpiece, and they opened it up until I found out, like I say, well, yeah, this. I say, I blow on it, and I say, no, open it a little bit more, so I don't know, but it's open.
How long have you used this particular setup?
Ever since about 48, somewhere around.
The same setup you use?
Setup. Number four reeds. And that open mouthpiece.
That's part of the secret to your sound, for the young musicians who are constantly searching for the ideal mouthpiece and reed combination and horn. Now we have a lot of discussion with young people about which model, which make horn that is going to be the best for the kind of work that they're doing. But you're telling me that you've played an auto link, a number four reed, a Selma tenor, I assume.
Yes.
Since 1940.
Yeah, but my first tenor was a Conn. And then I switched to tenor. In fact, Bird instrument was the instrument, Bird got me my first Selma. I was at the Apollo Theater with, he had a big band there.
Yeah.
And somebody he told me that I was trying to horn out a guy wanted to sell me, and he said that's a good horn, get that on, it was a balance action. Selma.
Yeah. Now is that the same Selma that you're playing?
No,
now?
I still got that. No, this is the Mark VI I got.
Well, I'm sure that part of the development of that sound that you have and that distinct style and everything is due to your just being persistent with a setup rather than changing horns and reeds and mouthpieces and all
that. Yeah, no. Right. But see, what happened was, Doc, is that you have to, you might have to do that, young musicians, you know, or musicians, whoever want a plain reed instrument, because Train tried, had a lot of mouthpieces he tried until he got to, see, you hear a particular sound in, mm-hmm. in your mind, and that's what you strive for, mm-hmm. you know, at least that's what I, that's my approach to sure. it. So I hear a particular, and I knew Train had that same approach to it. He was hearing a certain sound that he wanted to hear, so he was trying out different mouthpieces until he got just about what he wanted to hear.
Right.
And then he went with that.
Well, the interesting thing about that is, the starting back, I guess, Coleman Hawkins, who used an Autolink.
Autolink, yes.
And I guess he used a Conn at one time, and then later played a Selmer. Mm-hmm. But the difference in styles of all these guys who use almost the same kind of setup,
yes.
It is, I guess, an indication of what you just said, is that a lot of that sound is in your head.
Yes, yes, it's in your head.
You're and you develop something. All this equipment to make the sound that you mm-hmm. want. And I could use the same equipment that you use.
And it won't come out right. Yeah, it's very personal.
That's interesting. Yeah. That's very interesting. Along that line with the personal and distinctive sound, again, I mentioned your peers, Sonny Stitt and Rollins and Dexter, and I guess Coltrane, who was active.
Yeah, we all came up together.
Okay.
Yeah.
Everybody had and then again, everybody kind of fed on Charlie Parker.
And Prez.
Yeah. Everybody, yeah. All of you all were yeah. involved with that kind of interpretation. But then at some point, some of these others tended to lean more toward one model than the others.
Yes.
But yours appeared to me to still be distinctive and not lean so much. And the more I heard you as I listened to some of your early records and through, it seemed to be really on line toward a single kind of sound and interpretation. Mm. Is there any explanation you have for that?
Gee. No, Doc, I noticed that I play different in different contexts, but I play what I feel. Mm-hmm. Like, it's mad dabbing me some nights that I sound like nothing to me, to myself, and there are some nights that I'm right, you know, I feel that things are just falling in the right place.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not particularly conscious of trying to get close to the sounding like someone. I'm just, what is coming out is what I'm hearing
right.
and how I feel at that particular time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what really comes out. And like in different groups I played with, like I was with, I had a group with Julius Watkins and myself, the tenor saxophone and French horn.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a beautiful blend, saxophone and French horn blends
right.
together. You know, but I played different. That was just before I joined Thelonious.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got with Thelonious, I played different than I was playing with.